Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 10. It's the Montreal pregame show. As always, we'll be doing a little bit of a breakdown of what we expect this game to be like, and we're hopefully going to lead into the game. The idea with this episode was that, you know, both of us in the hour before the game want to get into Inter Miami, but there really isn't any content coming out in a live scenario right before the game starts. So we thought it would be fun to do our preview as, you know, the lineups were coming out in the hour before game time to try and, or to get Inter Miami fans into, you know, game mode. And with that, I am Scotty and I'm here with my co-host Soar. How you doing again, man?
I'm doing great. As you said, unlike our previous previews, the game is in an hour, so I'm slightly nervous, excited to see what the team sheet is going to be. And yeah, let's get into a weekend of football.
Before we start, and because we're still sort of waiting for the lineups to come out, I did a review of the Nashville game on Friday afternoon, but you were a little occupied. So why don't you give me your thoughts from the Nashville game real quick?
Yeah, the Nashville game was slightly interesting. You had the correct prediction of the formation. I went with a 4-3-3 despite my better judgment, because I wanted to offer something different, and I was hoping Tata Martino would sort of take my ideas into account. It was expected the way the game went, except the fact that I did not expect Nashville to score two goals. I think the structural deficiencies of the 3-5-2 are still very much there. I watched the highlights. I tried to dissect some of the issues that we're facing. And my immediate conclusion was that it seems like the back line, specifically the back five when it plays in the defense and when it's off the ball, doesn't know the correct structure. So the first goal that came from Schaffelberg was largely, I would say, entirely blamed on Avilés, because he was very much out of position there. He did not do a bit of scanning of where Schaffelberg was, because if he had, he would have known that Schaffelberg was in a lot of space and the potential target for the ball, which was from Moore. So I think that was one issue that was clearly very obviously seen. Unfortunate that we went behind immediately within the first 5 minutes. I think it got a lot better in the second half. The 3-5-2 seemed to have been working a lot better in the second half. The one goal that was scored by Schaffelberg, again, I don't think the structure was to blame there. You can blame the personnel for maybe not stepping in a little bit more. I think Redondo could have done better there. Allen could have done better there and maybe pressured Schaffelberg a little bit more there. But that was just individual brilliance. I don't think Callender could have done anything with that shot. Absolutely thundered into the back net. So good for them. And then the goal that was considered offside, which was Moore's to make it 3-1, which gave me a bit of a heart attack, not going to lie. That, again, was a lot of structural issues. I saw Gresso out of position. I saw Redondo getting beat by his man. So it just seems like there's a lot of chaos. And that's what I'm trying to get at. The 3-5-2 is not well drilled for this team. And the solution is fairly simple. You just need to have the wing backs and the two outside center backs coordinating when they're out of possession, knowing where to position themselves and not stretch themselves out like they did. So that's something that needs to be worked on off the game field and on the training pitch. So dude, sorry.
You're sinking a little bit.
I did realize that. Yeah.
So, okay. I think we both understood what was the difficulty of the 3-5-2 in the last game, but what do you expect to see from the lineup today as we're sort of waiting for it to come?
Again, I feel like it's become a bit of a trend with us that we want something, but we expect something else. I think want a 4-3-3. We want Tata to rotate his players, because the next game against Nashville is going to be, you know, it's going to define the start of the season. If we lose that game, it's going to be a big, big blow. So I think rest the players, give some of the youngsters a chance, give someone like a Ruiz a run out, you know, give Redondo the central responsibility for the midfield. I would like to see him in that role. Again, I would want to see the 4-3-3. However, I think it's going to be a 3-5-2 just because of the shortage of personnel.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's sort of two modes of thinking where you can put out a 4-3-3 with sort of your best personnel and try and see if it works so that you can, again, use it on Wednesday. Or you can go back to the 3-5-2 and just try and let the guys get more comfortable and just a few more minutes with better communication and so on and so forth. If, you know, for those that are watching the LA Galaxy Nashville game right now, Nashville only started one player that was in their starting lineup on Thursday. So they've rotated 10 guys, including the goalkeeper. So they're obviously buying into heavy rotation. Is that what you're expecting from this lineup today? Or are you expecting more, a few guys, but not total?
I would expect at least the big three or the big four to be rested. I would expect Messi to be rested, Suarez to be given a rest as well. I think Suarez has played quite a few minutes since the season started already. And given that he had a slow start, I don't want him, overexerting himself so early in the season. Busquets as well. As I said, this is, I think, a good opportunity to test out some things. And as I say that and as I think about it, I wouldn't even mind trying the 3-5-2 against Montreal because there's not much banking in this game. If we lose, we lose, you know, but okay. Get the youngsters lineup, out.
The lineup just came out, so let's talk about it. We got Drake Callender in goal. We are going with a 3-5-2. The back line is Noah Allen, Sergei Kristoff, and Toto Aviles. The wingbacks are Jordi Alba, who's back from his sickness, and David Ruiz. The midfield is Lawson Sunderland, Federico Redondo, and Julian Gressel. And then up top is Robert Taylor and Leo Campana. So let's see. We got Suarez, Messi, Busquets, Nico Freire,
Gomez,
all getting the game off, and Diego Gomez.
Yep.
So pretty significant rotation. what are your initial thoughts? And I'll hand it over to you while I work on this graphic.
Is Tata Martino watching this live stream? Because I feel like he took my point about giving the youngsters a go a bit of a shout. Honestly, I see your comments about what is this team, and there is cause for concern. But you know what? I don't mind the look of this. If you think about it, it gives Sunderland a chance to get a go out. It gives Redondo a look in the CDM position, which I think it'll be a good opportunity to see whether he can actually fit into that position, give him a exposure to the MLS pace and tempo as well. And it'll be a good test for him. I think having Gressel and Sunderland next to him would, I'm not sure about the athleticism there, but we'll see. But in terms of having Taylor and Campana up top, I think that could work, but I'll be honest, I don't expect us to win with this lineup out. Again, Ruiz in that right wing back position is, it's not very promising at all. He's played in that position before, but again, there needs to be a lot of communication and there needs to be a lot of, the positioning needs to be in place, which we haven't seen with this 3-5-2 before. I'm trying to go through some of your comments right now and talk to those. Yeah, I do think that Gressel could have been rested, given that he did get a lot of he has a lot of minutes under his belt. But I would have expected one of Gomez or Gressel to be rested, and I think Gomez, given that he also had a very his preseason wasn't as comprehensive as some of the rest of them, and he played in the pre-Olympics, I think might have been a factor behind that. But again, I'm not too concerned about this particular game, and I think this is one of those games where if we do end up losing with this particular lineup and this particular formation, I wouldn't be too surprised and I wouldn't be too disheartened by it, because I think it's a good opportunity to see what the team can do without Messi. And I notice your point about Messi not being in the squad at all, which is a little bit of a bummer, because if we were losing this 1-0, we'd want someone like Messi to come on and maybe change the game. And, you know, we're probably not going to get someone to have that much of an impact as Messi. I would have liked to see Boatwright as well. I think this would have been a perfect game to have him in play. And there might be an opportunity, perhaps in the second half, where we can switch to a 4-3-3 with Boatwright coming into that right back position. But yeah, a lot of youngsters with a lot to prove. This could go either way. This could either be like an absolute drubbing, because Montreal hasn't exactly looked bad in their first two games, or this could be the youngsters proving us that, you know what, this team actually has a lot of depth. It gets Campana a lot of minutes, so that's going to be great. Get him into match fitness, and yeah.
What are your thoughts on Gressel being in the lineup? Because I think now that Yedlin's gone, he's played more minutes than anyone this, if you include the preseason. I would have expected him to be one of the guys that needed a rest the most. Do you think that's like a sign that we might not see him on Wednesday night?
Well, if we don't see him on Wednesday night, that means that we're not playing the 3-5-2. So that'll be a great sign, because I don't expect Ruiz to play that right wing back position on Wednesday. That's basically shooting ourselves in one foot and then expecting us to play handicap the rest of the game. So I do think that this might be a game where Gressel gets like the first 50 minutes and then gets taken off after that and have Gomez come on, because you don't want players losing out in their match rhythm either. So in terms of the rotation, I think we're kind of paralyzed by the fact that we let Yedlin go. So someone had to step in and play those minutes. I would have expected Gomez to be that person, because I think he's athletic, he's in good match shape, but it's Gressel, and yeah, we'll see how it proceeds and whether we see some signs of, you know, wear and tear in Gressel after having played almost five games now. So
yeah, okay, let's talk about Lionel Messi. He's obviously not in the starting lineup. He's not on the bench. We saw that he got his leg stepped on at the end of last game, but he did stay in the game and he looked fine after that. Are you concerned? Do you think this is a long-term injury, or do you think this is just, us just being precautious?
No, I think this is a caution. Lionel Messi is a very durable player. Like, he hasn't had too many stints outside, you know, injured. So that's actually a good sign. The tackle was actually really bad and could have been much worse. I was really surprised that he was able to brush it off, like, you know, just put an ice pack on it and went away on his day. But I think this is more of a caution, gives us a chance again to see what this team is about without Messi. And honestly, it might even drive some conversations, whether to the positive or the negative, I'm not really sure. But this could be a game where everyone looks at and says, oh, even without Messi, there is quite a lot of depth in this game, in this team.
Yeah, it would be fun, especially because we're at home and our home record so far this year is quite good. We can talk more about the lineup as we get into how we think this game's going to play out. But let's talk about Montreal for a few minutes. They finished 10th in the East last year, so they missed the playoffs. That was good enough to get their coach fired and sort of restart the entire project. They did bring in Laurent Courtois, who is, I believe he was the Columbus Crew 2's head coach last year. So they're bringing in that Columbus Crew system that certainly works in the MLS. They obviously have only started to build their roster for it, but so far, so good. They've got 4 points from the first two games. They look decent against Orlando City. I didn't get to watch them last weekend, but what's your initial thoughts on Montreal? And maybe I can see if I can pull up their lineup.
Yeah, I'm looking at their lineup right now. I think Kokoro's back in the lineup, which is interesting, which means Joseph Martinez does not get the chance to start in his reunion with Inter Miami. This is an interesting team. As you said, they finished 10th in the season. A bit of a heartbreak for them as well, because I believe they lost in like the final 5 minutes where the other team got a penalty and they lost by 2 points on the playoff spot. They scored around 36 goals, which was the third worst in the league. So they didn't have a great attack, and they conceded 52 goals, which meant that their defense wasn't that great either. But they have had a handful of acquisitions in the offseason, which has sort of made this team a bit of a dark horse. I'm not entirely sure what to expect from them in terms of their play style, because as you said, a new coach has come in. We know what Coach was all about from his time in Columbus Crew, but he's obviously still trying to create this team specifically in his own image, and that's going to take some time. But from what I've seen, and I watched some of the highlights from the previous two games, this team has looked good. It has two specific attacking outlets, which can pose a lot of risk to Miami, especially with the 3-5-2 lineup that we have against them. They're good through the center because they've got reliable midfielders. They play with the two number 10s, which would have usually been Yankov and Duke. But I believe today we've got Duke and Vilsen, I believe. Vilsen had a goal in the last game, and he looked quite impressive as well. So very threatening, very positive and attacking. That's one outlet that they have through the midfield. And then they've also got the wingbacks. They've got Laster, and they, I forget the name, Bruan, I believe, who's a Brazilian right wingback. So this team can play in multiple ways, can threaten your backline in multiple ways. And this is going to be a really, really big test for Inter Miami. I think we're not only going to have to contend with that midfield battle, but this is also going to be where we need to make sure we don't play like we played against Nashville and allow their wingbacks to have as much space and as much, as much area to run into.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm like scrolling through Montreal's Twitter page and I don't see their lineup. So I haven't actually, okay, here we go. So they have this 3-4-2-1, which is actually a system that I really like. Columbus has done it under Wilfred Nancy and has had a lot of success. And it's something that I think is a really nice system, especially for this league, especially because those dual sixes kind of protect that back three. And it's solid defensively, but still gives you some attacking options, especially in the middle of the pitch. I like it a lot better than the 3-5-2 that Miami plays. With that said, I don't see options in their starting lineup and that I'm looking at now that really scare me like Jacob Schaffelberg did prior to Thursday night's game, where they have that dynamic pace over the top. That to me is like the biggest red flag or concern I see when I look at an opposing team starting lineup, especially when we're in the 3-5-2. And I don't see that in this one. How big of a difference is it going to be? And I know they have some guys off the bench that do scare me, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but how big of a difference does that make?
Again, this is a team that's still finding its way, so you don't really know who shows up. I'll go back to Vilsen because that was another one of those players who wasn't really even on the roster for Montreal until last game. He had to step in because Okopu had an injury. So I think it's easy to say that there isn't as much threat on paper, but how it plays out in practice is a completely different ball game. You can't start the way you did against Nashville and not expect to be punished. There is plenty of attacking threat in this team, and I say that because they've looked good against Detroit, I believe, was the last team that they played. And with the two tens that they... I think it was Dallas. With the two tens that they have, it can work either way. One of them can sit back, another one can push up, both of them can push up. They have a lot of good interplay between those players. Again, as you said, this formation works really well for the personnel that they have in play. And the fact that Kokoro is playing, he may not be good in terms of the stats that he has, but he works hard, he grinds throughout the game, and he has plenty of firepower to threaten Miami in some way or another. And the reason I'm worried is not because of Montreal and what they have to offer, but because how Miami has looked in the 3-5-2 and how vulnerable the backline becomes from the 4-3-3, where we look so stable, to the 3-5-2, where nobody seems to know what their role is. We leave a lot of gaps. So I feel like it's less about Montreal and it's more about how Inter Miami set up in their defense.
Just to answer a couple of the questions, it's true. Aviles has played every single game or started every single game of the preseason and regular season, and so has Julian Gressel. And I think Aviles has said a little bit more time off in the second half of games. Let's go over these two teams from last season and when the two met, because that'll lead into my sort of most dangerous player for Montreal. They opened the season last year, and I had to go back and watch the replays of both of these games because I don't really remember either of them. They played in the season opener last year, and they played about 2 months later, so this was sort of dark times for Inter Miami. But they opened the season. Inter Miami has a ton of debutants in that game. Franco Negri, Nico Stefanelli, Sergei Kristoff. Chris McVay was starting at center back, and he was a fullback the year before. Joseph Martinez's first game. Coco Jean was in the starting lineup. He only made two appearances, I think, the year before that. So it was a really new team under Phil Neville, and they sort of went with this 4-4-2 diamond. It does produce a 2-0 victory at home at Drive Pink. Sergei Kristoff scores on a corner, and then Schneider Borgelin has a sort of a tap-in goal. So nothing sort of outstanding in terms of the run of play, but it was a 2-0 result to open the season, which was always good. I think what was really interesting about that game is that, or at least while I was watching the replays, is that Joseph Martinez starts for Inter Miami and Bryce Duke and Ariel Lasseter both come off the bench for Inter Miami. So that was interesting to see. I sort of had forgotten what they looked like in Inter Miami colors. And then, of course, Kamal Miller started for Montreal. So sort of a flashback of a time in Inter Miami's history pre this era. So that was pretty interesting. They play again in May, at the end of May. This was in Montreal. I also didn't remember this game very well, and it's because Inter Miami did almost nothing of note. And this brings me into sort of my dynamic player that I'm really interested in this game. But before I do, I want to talk about that trade made on, I think, February 12th or February 13th, where Inter Miami sends Bryce Duke and Ariel Lasseter to Montreal. They get Kamal Miller in exchange, and then they get over $1 million in GAM, which was huge in terms of being able to sign, especially the under 22 DPs last summer. Just now that it's been almost a year and we're playing Montreal again, what are your thoughts on that trade and how big of a move it was? And, you know, hats off to Chris Henderson for making that happen.
Yeah, no, I think losing Kamal Miller at the time seemed to have been a bit of a controversial decision. Of course, he was one of the key pieces in that Miami team at the time. But I think both these teams specifically today, they're not the same as they were when we last played them. And Miami is not the same that we were when they last played us. So I think there's a new look to both of these teams. They're both teams that have done some really good business in the offseason. And both, I think, have improved. And I think that trade was one of the starting points for, you know, building onto that roster. I think this is going to be a better game than we had played them previously. Of course, we don't have most of our starting players, but still, I think the depth that Inter Miami has is interesting. It's promising, and I love to see how someone like a Lawson Sunderland and David Ruiz fit into this particular team.
The second game for those two teams last season, again, it was in May. Montreal wins 1-0 in Montreal. And the reason why I kind of wanted to wait to bring this up is because the player that was terrorizing Miami on that day was Ibrahim Sanusi. He is on the bench for Montreal today. He is like an athletic guy who is not afraid to dribble at people. He's not afraid to take shots. And he's, you know, a big, strong, fast, athletic player. He's really the name that really scares me, although he doesn't play wide like a Jacob Schaffelberg. He does, you know, he likes to play sort of more up the middle of the pitch. He's a guy that's kind of scares me just based on that one performance last season, but he's the guy that I'm sort of circling as. I'm a little worried if we see him come off the bench in the 50th minute or 60th minute.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think there's definitely, I would say Montreal doesn't have the kind of depth that Miami does, but having someone like Sunusi come in is, yes, worrying, but I do think we'd be able to deal with him if we play a 4-3-3 in the second half.
Well, yeah, I don't even know if Sunusi is sort of a bench option for them yet, because we see Joseph Martinez is on the bench for them, and he's probably, I'm assuming, one of their first guys off the bench. Let's talk about Jose Martinez. He was with Inter Miami for one season. He scored 12 goals in all competitions, but I believe four or five of them were penalties. So 7 or 8 goals from the run of play. I think it was a disappointing season by Jose Martinez's standards. He's clearly not the same player he was when he was starring for Atlanta. What do you expect to see from him in this game? And I guess the thing that I wanted to bring up was when we played Atlanta last season and it was sort of a revenge game for him, he scored 2 goals against Atlanta for us. And now it's sort of a revenge game for his time in Miami. Do you expect him to have a big impact in this game?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think he started off the season well. He's already scored 1 goal for them. He has a lot to prove, man. What the management basically said to Jose Martinez was that you don't fit in our future plans and the new era of Inter Miami is going to go on without you. For someone to hear that, I think, of course, this is going to be a big motivation to try and prove them wrong. I think coming off the bench is, I think, better for him, because if this game is stuck at a 0-0 or a 1-1, I fear that Jose Martinez might have something to say in terms of changing that scoreline. So a lot to prove for him. He's going to be motivated. He's going to be fresh coming off the bench as well. So we'll see how that plays out, but it's going to be an interesting reunion.
Let's talk about Lassiter and Duke. Duke was sort of the big name that Montreal really wanted when they made that trade last season, because they thought that Bryce Duke could be their centerpiece 10 for them moving forward, sort of like Georgi Mihailovic was for them in years past, a guy that they brought over when he was not at his best and they sort of got him to that top level. That was in the previous regime. I don't know if he's still sort of the guy they want to be their centerpiece, but he's a guy that has creativity. He can make a nice pass. He can do some nice 10 things, but at least when he was in Miami, the consistency wasn't there. Do you expect him to be a difference maker in this game?
Not really. I think from what I heard Montreal fans describe Lassiter as well from, you know, his stint with them last season, he seems to be a dependable player. He did really well. He, I think, was one of the most consistent players for them in an overall unpromising season and overall disappointing season. I think he's going to be stable. He's going to be a steady Nancy, as they say, but I don't think he's going to be one of the difference makers in this particular game.
Yeah, and sort of like you mentioned with Lassiter, we know he's a guy that can get up and down the wing, but he's not maybe a huge difference maker unless he gets a prime opportunity handed to him.
I, in fact, think Ruan on the other side is going to be more of a threat and someone that we're going to have to contend with, because he's not afraid to bomb down that right channel. And he's shown he has the tenacity to find the right pass. He knows he has the intelligence to get into the right spaces. So that, I think, is going to be something we need to look out for.
Going back to Jose Martinez, Inter Miami, you know, it seemed like every time we got a new coach last season, they gave Jose Martinez a nice long leash to try and establish himself. First, it was at the beginning of the season with Phil Neville, until Martinez slowly lost his spot to Campana. And then when Morales came in as the interim, he also put Jose Martinez back in the starting lineup, and it didn't go so well. And then when Tata comes, Tata has this history with Jose Martinez, and clearly Martinez and Lionel Messi had this sort of friendship that blossomed right away. And so Tata again gave Jose Martinez a nice long leash throughout the League's Cup, until we sort of saw Leo Campana once again take over the starting spot. This is Leo Campana's first start of this season. We've seen him a few times off the bench, but what are you expecting from him in this top two, with a, you know, a front two? And then maybe talk to me about what you see from Robert Taylor today. See here that we have a, you know, comment about what their roles are going to be.
Yeah, that I think is a really interesting comment, and I'd like to speak more to that as well. But just talking about Campana, listen, we all know he's a great player. I think on any other MLS roster, he would have actually been a starter, if not for Luis Suarez in this Miami team. I know both of us have sort of contemplated having him start the game when Suarez wasn't firing and wasn't playing as well. So that, I think, is definitely motivation for him in the sense that he's finally getting to start his first game this season. He's going to want to prove to Tata Martino that, you know, I also can score goals like Suarez. So I'm hoping he bags not one, but a few in this game, makes the difference. But I think he's definitely going to be one of those difference makers in this particular game. He's going to be our target man. If we're sticking to that 3-5-2, we need to have Gresso, we need to have Ruiz popping those balls in into Campana, because we know he's a great target man and he will finish those opportunities off inside the box when he gets the chance. So I think he'll definitely have something to say in this game. Then talking about Taylor as part of the top two, I actually agree with the comment here that he might actually play more like a second striker or someone who helps out on the channels. He has the athleticism, he is quick, and I think we know he can do a defensive job when asked of. He's previously, when playing a 3-5-2, I believe we've seen Taylor in a more backward role in the midfield, I think. But even in a 4-3-3, we often see him come back and defend. And I think that's going to be one of the key aspects of this game. We might need him to protect some of those channels and help someone like a Gresso or help someone like a Ruiz on those channels, stopping Montreal from creating the attacks in those areas, because he can essentially be an extra man in that area.
Yeah, I know we saw that, especially in the Galaxy and Orlando City games, where he sort of dropped into a 4-4-2 defensively. But I don't think we're going to see that today. I think he's going to be a second striker with the freedom to sort of drift wide if he wants to. But similar to how we saw Luis Suarez play as a true nine and then have Messi have a little bit more freedom to play in the center of the park, I think that's what we're going to see today, just with Campana and Robert Taylor. And an interesting sort of reverse where Campana is a lefty and Robert Taylor's right-footed, whereas Messi and Suarez are the opposite. So, you know, it might look different just because it's, you know, opposite sides. But let's talk about this midfield. Sunderland, Redondo, Gresso. Redondo's going to play the Busquets role. Gresso's going to do what Gresso's done. And then Sunderland's going to sort of take over for Diego Gomez and play that box-to-box role. What are you expecting from them? And do you think this midfield has the solidity to be impactful and make this game happen?
Yeah, there are a few question marks on this midfield, not because I don't trust the personnel as such, but obviously it's a new makeup. We don't know how these pieces fit together and how Redondo, Sunderland and Gresso would play together. I am very interested to see this, because I think for Redondo, this is a big opportunity, a big test, and I think good experience for him to have that sole responsibility as a CDM. I said earlier as well, I think he's going to have to do a bit of a defensive job here. Going to have to protect his backline. He's going to have to maybe help out Alba and Ruiz. So there are question marks about his athleticism that I know you're very much concerned about. So I think that's something that we're going to get to see play out a little bit, whether Redondo is physically the player that we want him to be or someone who can play that sole CDM position. With Sunderland, I think he's always had a good positive impact when he's come off the bench, but I'm not too sure how good he is as a starting player. So I think, again, for him, this is a good run out. I think this is a good opportunity against a Montreal team that might not be as dangerous as someone like a Galaxy or Nashville. So it'll be a good chance for him to sort of, you know, stake his claim in this midfield in case Tata is looking for some different options as well. But as I said, I think the key to this midfield is Redondo covering that back line as much as he can, especially with Alba and Ruiz, and he's going to have to do a lot of sweeping.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be really interesting to see what he can do in this game. I was a little unsure of what his role was going to be last game, and I think even for the first half, he was a little unsure of what his role was, and that's something that he'll improve on as, you know, he spends more time in the system and, you know, working with the guys. But I think today it's pretty clear he's going to be the guy that helps the build out. He's going to be the holding midfielder. He's going to be, you know, he's going to do what Sergio Busquets has been doing for us. I also think it's interesting that Lawson Sunderland is getting the midfield start over David Ruiz. We'll talk about Ruiz in a second, but Tata clearly likes Lawson Sunderland. He's a guy that Inter Miami had never given a chance to until Tata came. And then in his first game, he just threw Sunderland out there. And not long later, we signed him to a first team contract. David Ruiz. He's been mostly a defensive midfielder for us, but I think he profiles better as a box to box because he has a little bit of, you know, he's got some talent going forward and he's got a little bit of end product in the final third. But athletically, I think he does profile as someone that can play this right back or right wing back spot. And I thought there was a chance, or I think there is a chance this season that we see David Ruiz play as a more traditional right back in a 4-3-3. So I'm really interested in this game. I know you talked about wanting to see Boatwright. But I think this is a more likely scenario where David Ruiz becomes a true right back in a 4-3-3. He has the athletic profile. He has a little bit going forward, although I don't know how great of a crosser he is. So, I mean, maybe not a perfect player, but maybe defensively he has what it takes. What are your thoughts and what are you looking forward to seeing from Ruiz?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that point of him being a traditional right back. I think in a right wing back position, he can sort of get away with his defensive deficiencies and not having to fulfill his defensive role as much. In a traditional right back position, he needs to have some sort of a defensive mindset, and he needs to know his positioning, and he needs to know how to track back, when to track back, and he's going to have to have both aspects of his game really sharp. Having someone like a Yedlin, who may not have been the most prolific player, he was stable in that position, and you need stability in that specific role. I think the reason our backline looked so good in the 4-3-3 was because the back four were working really well. They knew where to position themselves at what point and when to go forward and when to go back. For Ruiz to play that position, he's going to have to learn that. And I'm not too sure whether that's his exact fit and whether that's going to be making use of his capabilities in the best manner. That being said, I think another good switch in by Tata, I think it'll be a good opportunity to see how Ruiz plays in that right wing back position. I agree with you. He has the athleticism to plug in here. I think he's probably going to be the more offensive minded wing back in comparison to Alba, because he is not traditionally a defender. So I would expect Alba to be a little bit more defensive minded and maybe protect that back line with a four at the back when we're pushing the ball forward. I don't know if that's a bit of an unbalance, because I like Alba moving forward. But anyways, you were saying something.
I don't want to sell David Ruiz short. I mean, he has played as a defensive midfielder for us. I think his natural instincts are to get forward, and I think that he has some ability in the final third. But listen, we'll see if he can stay disciplined today. We'll see what he looks like playing defensively. Yeah. And I think maybe this is the first step to seeing if he can play, you know, out there and you know, bringing in a soft entrance with a 3-5-2 and as a wing back. But maybe if it goes well, we might see him in a 4-3-3. Just something I want to think about. I think it makes sense to have Christoph and Aviles play, and I think it makes sense for Freire, who didn't get a preseason, who's still coming off a leg injury. I think it makes sense to give him a break. But Aviles and Christoph.
I believe we may have lost Scotty there for a bit. I'm not sure if I'm still live, but yeah, so speaking of Aviles and Christoph, I think in the preseason they looked slightly iffy, and I'm not sure if I like the look of the backline then, but I think since the season has started, Aviles and Christoph have looked good. Freire has also looked good, but I would have expected Freire to get the rest, especially because he was coming off of an injury. Sorry, I believe we have Scotty back now. You were talking about Aviles and Christoph.
Sorry. Well, I just think that those two need more time in this system, and so it doesn't surprise me at all that we see them going.
Yeah.
What do you expect from the back line today? Do you think they'll be better than they were Thursday?
I hope they'll be better than they were Thursday, because there was a lot of issues in that game on Thursday. Again, because we're changing around personnel so much, I don't know if we'll get the same level of consistency that we've had in the last few games. And I do expect the backline to leak a couple of goals, if I'm being honest. And just because we're getting, again, a 3-5-2 has never looked comfortable. A 3-5-2 with Ruiz, I'm not too sure. Again, this is not to say that Ruiz can't play that role. This is to say that the team itself hasn't looked great with three at the back and then two wing backs. So I'm not too confident whether we're going to correct some of the errors that we've had before, but we'll see. We'll see. And if those who are looking at our rivals, Nashville was 2-1 up against Galaxy, but Galaxy is 2-0 up against Galaxy, but Galaxy's pulled one back, so it's now 2-1.
Interesting. I haven't been paying attention in that game. How do you think this game's going to play out? I know we've only seen Montreal twice, and you know I've only watched them once. And this is a new system, new coach, new style of play. What do you, how do you expect this game to play out, especially with Inter Miami having a heavily rotated squad?
I think the first half we're going to be really holding our heads because I think Montreal's going to stop quicker and sharper than Miami just because there's a whole bunch of rotation. And it's going to take a while before we figure out how this formation and how this personnel plays out. So I think the first half is going to be, or at least the first 20 minutes are going to be dominated by Montreal with Inter Miami still trying to figure out and keep up. I think Montreal might actually nick a goal in the first half. And then in the second half, we're going to see a lot more of what this personnel can do in this 3-5-2. At some point, I expect us to switch to a 4-3-3 with Boatwright coming in, and that's when we're going to get our goal with Campana scoring, and I think it's going to end 1-1.
We'll hold off on our predictions for a little bit, but yeah, I remember in that Orlando City game, which was to open the season, they came out firing in the first few minutes. The first five or so minutes, they had four shots on goal. Orlando City just didn't know what to do. They couldn't play out of the back. They were turning the ball over, and then Orlando City started to settle into the game. I expect something similar today where Montreal is going to come out. They're going to try and put the pressure on right away. They're going to try and establish themselves in the game. And it may take Inter Miami a few minutes, especially with sort of a younger squad out there today, to be able to sort of calm down and get things going. I don't see any prolific scorers on Montreal in terms of guys that I think if you give them one chance, they're going to make it happen no matter what. So I think we can survive that, but I agree. I think that's how this game's going to start. I think in the second half, we're going to see maybe in the 60th minute, that's where we're going to see some of the big names, Luis Suarez. And, that brings me up a question, but do you think we're going to see Suarez and Campana up there together at some point today?
Ooh, that's a really interesting thought. Something that I like to see eventually during the season, but today I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Campana is going to get switched out for Luis Suarez, not Taylor. So I think that's going to be the case. And I do think that there's going to be a change in formation in the second half, especially when the substitutes come on. And I think at that point, we're going to see a 4-3-3 with Suarez as the sole striker, and then maybe Taylor switching to the left side or having someone like Ruiz fill in that role. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see those two together, even though I'd like to.
We got a comment here from Simon that Suarez is only going to play if needed. I do agree with that, but I think he's going to be needed. I don't think Inter Miami is going to dominate this game. I don't think they're going to have a two-goal lead at any point, although I would love for that to be the case. Who are the difference makers? Who are they going to be in this game?
I think it's going to be Redondo. Now, when you say difference maker...
Before we go on, you weren't with me on the podcast on Friday when we talked about the Nashville game. What did you think about Redondo in his debut?
I think it was as good as you could have expected it to be for someone who hasn't played with this team and hasn't had the time to integrate into the team as well. I saw signs of him being good. He had some issues. I think there was some concerns about his positionality, but that might have been more so about him figuring out what his role in this team is and trying to get on the same page as his teammates and get into the chemistry of the team. But I think that it's a promising signing, and I think this is going to be a bigger test and understanding of who Redondo is as a player than the previous game. And I wouldn't put too much on his first performance against Nashville, which is a big game, and B, against a team that can be really frustrating to play against. So it'll be, this one's going to be more of a signpost of who Redondo is as a player.
Yeah, I'm excited because this is going to be his opportunity to be the man and play his style. And, you know, Lawson Sunderland can play around him and sort of figure it out from there. But he won't have to be playing with Sergio Busquets, trying to figure out how does he fit into this. And also the pressure is a lot lower just because this isn't a Champions Cup game. It's not a sort of knockout first leg. It's a normal MLS game. This game isn't quite as important. So I'm excited to see him. I think we'll get more of the real Redondo in today's game, and I'm excited for that. Other than Redondo, who are some of the people that you think are going to make a big difference in both Montreal and for Miami?
Yeah, I think Campana is going to be a big difference maker as well. I think he's going to have to do a lot of the work defensively, but I think offensively he's going to be one of the main outlets that we will see potentially scoring a goal. Because I think whenever we've looked good in a 3-5-2, it's always been with the crosses in the box. And I think Campana is really good at that. And as the target man, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's great that we're playing him in this 3-5-2, and it'll be good to see Gressel or Ruiz or Alba put in some crosses for him, because I think that's where he's going to be the most effective, and that's where he's going to be the most threatening.
Yeah, you can definitely see a world where the primary strategy to score a goal is for Jordi Alba or Julian Gressel on either side to be lobbing in balls into Campana, and Campana trying to head him in. The one thing I'll say about Campana that we've seen is he's a guy that takes a game or two as a starter to sort of get going, but once he gets going, he can score goals in bunches. So I'm not convinced we're going to get the best Leo Campana today, although even when he's not his best, he can still score a goal out of nowhere. Let's go into predictions, because we're getting to about 23 minutes until kickoff. I know you said 1-1. Is that your official prediction, and how is that going to come about?
13 minutes to kickoff, I believe, and I do think it's going to be 1-1.
Oh, dude, this is MLS. It always is going to be 10 minutes.
Fair enough. And I thought we were going to be punctual here. But I said 1-1, and I think it's going to be 1-1. I think Montreal is going to get one in the first half just because of the nature of their start. I think they're going to be sharper. They're going to be able to exploit the spaces in the 3-5-2. I think in the second half, we're going to look a lot more composed. We're going to look a lot more structurally sound. And I think I actually agree with the comment here that we might actually score early in the second half and then just try to see out that 1-1 draw, because I think our eyes are more towards Nashville, and this is a game that we can potentially, I would be happy to lose this game if it means we're gonna go on Wednesday and absolutely trounce Nashville. That's how I'm gonna put it as, and I think that's how the team might be treating this as well.
I went back and I watched the highlights from last year's two matchups versus Montreal, just because I kind of forgot what happened. And in that second game in Montreal, Drake Callender was phenomenal. In fact, he was pretty good in both games, and he earned the clean sheet in that first one. I think we might get a really good performance from Drake Callender today. And I think that we're going to nick a goal at some point in the first half of the second half. And I think it's going to come from Robert Taylor. I think Leo Campana is probably going to be key to setting up most of our opportunities in this game. I mean, he's pretty good at holding the ball up, and he's pretty good at letting players advance while he just holds the ball. But I think Robert Taylor is going to be the person to get the goal. He has 2 goals this season so far. He had 17 goal contributions last season. So this is a player that has real end product. And he's a guy that I think Inter Miami fans love to see score, because he's one of our old hands, a guy that's been there during the bad times and the good times. And I think Inter Miami wins this game 1-0. Are you afraid of Josef Martínez coming off the bench and making an impact? Because I think to me, that's like that's the vision that's going through my head of him coming back, scoring a goal. Everyone talking about how Jose Martinez has to do this against his old team and how Inter Miami is not as great as they, you know, as good as people think they are. And even though this is a rotated side, that'll be pushed away. That's sort of my fear. Do you think that's realistic, or do you think I'm just, you know, having nightmares?
Listen, man, from what I know from my few years of watching football, from my 15 years of following soccer, it's a magical game with magical moments, and these things do tend to happen. So I also share your concern about Jose Martinez coming on and scoring, because that's just the storybook ending that's just written in the stars. And it could potentially come true, and he might have some say in that decision. But you know what? If it's meant to be that way, it's meant to be that way. But I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah, I'm going to stop putting that out into the universe now.
Yep.
You know, you said 1-1. You said a goal in the first part of the second half. Do you think that comes after Miami makes their formation switch, or do you think that comes first?
I think that comes first. I think that comes before Campana still on the pitch, while I think we're still trying to because my prediction is based on the cross coming in and Campana scoring. So I think the 3-5-2 is the best suited to that. And I think that's when it's going to happen. But we're going to eventually switch into a 4-3-3, hopefully, and see that with some of these personnel as well, because I'd like to see Redondo in a 4-3-3. I'd like to see Sunderland in a 4-3-3 as well. So hopefully we see that at some point.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we stop talking about this game? We are going to go live for about 9 more minutes. But I want to talk about some of the roster discussion that's happened this week. We haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast yet. So is there anything else you want to mention for this game? You've given your prediction, your goal scorers. We've talked about both teams. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, just in terms of fans watching this particular game, I would just like to say, don't put too much pressure on what the outcome of this game is, because I think in the grand scheme of things, if we end up losing this game, it doesn't really mean much. And I think, as I said, we're more concerned about the game against Nashville. There are changes. There might be instances where we don't look that great. So what I would say would be just stop yourselves from overreacting. At least I'll try to do that myself. If Redondo doesn't have a good game, I'm not going to, you know, make a fuss about it and try to analyze it rationally. And again, there are a lot of changes, a lot of incomings, a lot of players getting their first starts in this season. So it might not be the best Miami that we see, but again, we all hope for a win.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There's a lot of young players playing today, and young players have a habit of being inconsistent. It's the only consistent thing about them is that they're inconsistent. So a good point. This is not the not the most important game of the season. And in fact, whatever happens today, we're still going to be, unless we get absolutely blown out, we're still going to be top of the table by tonight. So I'm not too worried. Although it does sound like some of our fans in the comments section would hate to see an undefeated season go by. And, I don't think either of us think we're going to lose today per se. But as far as individual performances, I think, you know, let's give some slack. Let's talk about the roster. We traded DeAndre Yedlin last week, and you know, you can go back to listen to some of our last podcasts to get our thoughts on that. But Franco Escobar was a name that came out right away, someone that we might replace him with. A few days later, Marcelo Wiegandt from Boca Juniors is a player that his name sort of popped up. What are your thoughts on this move and this player? And do you think this is actually going to happen? Because I have some thoughts on if it's actually going to happen.
Yeah, I think I know what you're going to say in terms of the viability of this particular trade, this particular move. But in terms of the player himself, I'll be honest, I haven't done much research into him, and I'm not sure whether that's going to be an upgrade or a downgrade. Of course, Boca Juniors, all players come from a legacy of, you know, Argentinian soccer. So I do expect him to be good. I'm not sure whether he's what this team is looking for and whether he's an upgrade on Yedlin. I'd love to hear your thoughts more on this. Whether this trade comes through or whether this deal comes through or not, apologies. I think they're asking for $1 million. We've tried previously to negotiate with Boca Juniors, which hasn't ended well for Miami. So for our viewers who are thinking that he might be coming through and this might be a done deal, I would say maybe, you know, put a caveat to that, because there doesn't seem to be too much positivity with our dealings with Boca Juniors before.
Yeah, just to add a few more details, his contract with Boca Juniors ends in June, I believe. And so Inter Miami spoke with his agent and sort of got together and sort of came to an agreement on what it would look like if he did come to Inter Miami. And I think they agreed on that and they liked the idea of that. And so Inter Miami went to Boca Juniors and asked, you know, can we have him now instead of waiting until June? Because, you know, we don't have a right back and you guys are going to lose this player for nothing anyways. And I don't even think he's in their starting lineup. He's not in their long-term plans. They've already got a replacement for him. So, you know, let's just have him now and we'll give you a small transfer fee for it. And Boca Juniors said, we want $1 million. And Inter Miami said, that doesn't fit within our cap charge. So no, thank you. I think the two sides are still working on it. I think this is the guy they want. I do think he's an upgrade on DeAndre Yedlin. You know, just over a year ago, we signed a fullback out of Argentina in Franco Negri, and he was better than I was expecting. And I think this guy is even a more prominent player. So I think he would be a good pickup. But like you mentioned, we spent all of January negotiating with Boca over Christian Medina. He's the young midfielder that we wanted before we turned to Federico Redondo. And they played hardball with us then. And I don't see any reason why they wouldn't play hardball with us now. Obviously, this player isn't quite as prominent in their long-term plans. Christian Medina is one of their best players and a young star that they think they're going to be able to sell for a lot of money to Europe soon. But still, I didn't get the sense that these two teams are in lockstep in terms of transfers. And so I just want to put some dampen the idea that this is a guy that we're going to get in the next week or so, because it's just naturally going to happen. I see in the comment section that we were also linked to a guy named Lionel Di Placido. I think this same exact thing happened in January, where Inter Miami wanted Christian Medina. And then when they couldn't get him, they put it out there that they were connected to some other guy. In this case, it was Pallavicino from River Plate. And, I think that was just to go back to Boca and say, listen, we have another guy that we can get for this position, so you should give us a deal, because they just wanted to create some leverage. I think this is the same thing. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Because we only have about 2.5 more minutes on Wigan.
No, the last thing I just want to ask is, donde esta Yannick Brightman? Because I want to see him get integrated into the squad as soon as possible. And I think this would have been the perfect game for him to start as well. So sad to see that hasn't happened yet, but we still got time.
Here's the thing with Bright. When we sign Bright, that's how you'll know our roster move, you know, our maneuvering on the roster is done until the summer. They're going to do everything that they want to do to build this roster. And then they're going to sign Bright last, because they don't want to sign Bright and have that constrict what they can do. So when you see them sign Yannick Bright, that'll mean they're done until the summer, the next transfer window. And then lastly, just, you know, we have 2 minutes left. Matias Rojas is a guy that we were linked to. Michelle Kaufman even reported that we have an agreement. And so to me, that was like a done deal. And then here we are 5 or 6 days later, and we haven't heard anything since then. My theory is that Inter Miami is trying to get this right back first, and they want to make sure they still have space, because if they signed Wigan for $1 million transfer window, I don't know if they would have room for Rojas. But you know, do you think that's still going on? I mean, it's been a couple of days since we've heard anything.
Yeah, I think it's still happening in the background, because it would be you know, idiotic not to. Of course, there's something concrete behind this. Of course, there are talks going on behind these two moves. And it would be idiotic to not have that in place still while we don't even know whether we're going to get our first choice right back option. So I think the deals are still being explored. As you said, they're still trying to figure out the makeup of this roster and what it's going to look like. The priority right now is, I think, a right back. So that's what we're going to go for, and then see if we can turn to someone like a Matias Rojas.
I just want to say one last thing before we go. Over the last couple of weeks, I've waited, with bated breath for the lineups to come out, and then the lineups come out, and I know that I'm now in inner Miami mode, and I want the game to start. I want there to be a pregame discussion, and it just didn't seem like there was anything. So I figured, I went to Soren, I said, maybe we can be the hour before the game starts show, so fans can come and sort of get their inner Miami fix because they're ready for the game and they just want it to start, and they need some action for the hour before because they're ready for their team to play. And so that's why we did this today. If you liked it, if you thought we did good, if you thought this is something that you would come back to, give us some thoughts because we're just trying it out for the first time today to see if it was something that we enjoyed doing and that fans would also want, because if there's a need for a space like this, then we'd be happy to provide it. So give us your thoughts in the comments section. And other than that, anything else before we go? The game's probably going to kick off in the next 10 minutes or so.
No, man, I hope the youngsters come through and we end up winning 5-0, but we'll see. Enjoy the game to our viewers. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, and I think we're going to get a win today. Home victory. We'll go 3-0 to start the season, and it'll be all good. Anyways, game's going to start soon, so see you guys next time.